You there, what day is it? That's right, it's Charity Digital Podcast Day. You have not missed it. And here we are with a prize podcast about fundraising just for you, tenuously based on a Dickens novel at that. Think again, Little Dorrit fans. We're obviously talking about A Christmas Carol. We thought a seasonal tale about kindness and charity would work well as a basis for a wintry podcast about fundraising. Not to mention, it comes with a very handy structure that we intend to follow here. In this podcast, we'll be visited by three guests. Charity Digital's very own Joanne Mark-Jones, content editor, Lisa Chamette, business development manager, and Sasha Devalia, marketing executive, who will offer us all their thoughts on the past, present, and future of fundraising. I'm Laura Stanley, content writer at Charity Digital. I'll be your host and the resident Muppet in this Christmas carol. I want to apologise in advance for the amount of references I'm going to pack into this episode. Like old Ebenezer himself, we will take the lessons from fundraising that once was, look at where we are now, and think about what it all means going forwards. We'll cover the joys of in-person fundraising, the bounty that digital can provide, and what charities can do with new fundraising techniques to ensure perpetual happiness in the future. Perhaps after this, Scrooge will turn up at Bob Cratchit's door with a contactless payment device. Or maybe Tiny Tim can be saved with a QR code, as well as a massive, inappropriately sized, given the oven the Cratchits are likely to have turkey. Who can tell, but I sure am feeling festive. So like Jacob Marley before me, let me rattle my chains ominously and get things underway. Joanne, the first of our three spirits, let's start with you. What do you think we've learned from the fundraising past?
Thank you for having me, Laura. An impressive amount of references. Unbelievably impressive amount of references. I think, in terms of the past, I think there's a lot to learn, particularly in terms of authenticity and personality. So charities in the present are often prioritizing quantity over quality. So things like emails, chatbots, virtual events, posts on social media. These things tend to reach more people, but it doesn't convert a ton of people. And it particularly doesn't convert people in terms of lasting donations and lasting relationships. So I think the past is all about learning about authenticity and trying to carry that into the present. So I think they had those benefits of in-person fundraising events are good examples. An in-person fundraising event would better utilize pre-existing supporters, whether that means staff or volunteers or people who had already signed up to the charity. Those people would be at the events, at the fundraising events, and sort of see what was working, could see how potential donors were reacting, and they could react to those reactions. Essentially, they can make fundraising better while it's happening and just generally improve fundraising because they're there and they're in person. And similarly, in-person events and in-person fundraising has a better relationship with the community generally. So you're working with local businesses, ensuring they turn up to the event in terms of maybe like food trucks or car washes. And you work with schools and other shelters and services and so on and so forth, who can also have that local connection with your event and with your fundraising. And I think that local connection is massively important, as people are more likely to donate to visible charities, charities that are out there in the community, charities who they can see the impact of what they're doing. So that's the primary thing, as I see the past, was they had this huge connection with their communities, with local businesses, but also with the people they're representing and the users that are sort of service users. So it's all about seeing the impact. And I think charities, what they can do in the present is take away that personality and push it into a more virtual world, because the virtual can also be a bit cold at times and a bit sort of standoffish, and there's not that relationship. So charities can try and take that aspect of the past, apply it to the present and the future by, for example, inviting local businesses to participate and ensure they feel valued, personalizing marketing and comms for events. And what that means is not just sending blanket emails to hundreds and hundreds, thousands of people, but actually personalizing some and talking, you know, individually to people if possible, or as much as possible, ensuring all hosts and people who participate are bubbly and approachable and open. So one thing to do is have help on hand to further explain. If you're in a virtual fundraising situation, have an option where people can learn more and have an option where they can actually just approach you and you can explain your mission. Make it personable, make it authentic, and I think that will generate more funds.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Lisa, what do you think?
Yeah, and I think that I agree with Johan, the sort of authenticity remains key. And what you had, you know, in the past, you may have lost it, you know, past 18 months and, you know, online. And I think it's very important to sort of retain that when we go back to, you know, in-person fundraising and in-person activities. I think many some small charities that had done Facebook fundraising events, and that had a great turnout, not only, you know, with people that would not necessarily take part in their event, but because they felt that, you know, they had to participate, they won new audiences that were drawn to their simplicity and authenticity. So I think, you know, it's good to be back in person, and hopefully for the very near future. But it's going to be, it will be very interesting to see what elements you can retain from this past 18 months and apply that for the future.
Completely.
Sasha, do you have anything to add on what the things we need to keep from pre-COVID fundraising?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I was thinking about the past, and also, can I just say, Laura, I felt so festive listening to your introduction. I suddenly got really excited about Christmas, but when I was thinking about the past and what it was like, you know, when before COVID and everything, I was thinking, was it actually a bit easier than it is now? You know, for example, when you think about cake sales, for children doing cake sales, it's so easy for them to just say, hey, there's a cause I'm actually really interested about. They go to the school, they say, can I throw a cake sale? And they can be any age. And actually I saw a kind of article about this this girl who was 9 years old. She's called Ruby, and she wanted to run a cake sale for a smart pre-bend centre who support people who are homeless. And you know, I think all of us have done that in the past. And she raised £240. But the thing that was different, and I think this really captures where we are now and thinking about the future, the thing that was different was that she also actually had her own online fundraising profile. I mean, what a clever 9-year-old girl.
Oh my word.
I think, and with that online fundraising platform, she raised £44. So, you know, of the £240 that she raised from the overall cake and coffee morning, £44 of that was online. And I think that to me really summarizes taking something that, you know, anybody could do in the past, but bringing some digital elements that we've adopted throughout this time, throughout COVID. So that's just, it's just a really interesting story that I felt captures what we do need to keep, that authenticity, that feeling of community, but elevating it with digital.
Yeah, completely. That takes us quite nicely on to the present. Thank you very much, Sasha. What a gift you've given for this festive podcast. So what lessons can we learn from the present? How do we make things more digital and keep that authenticity, I guess? Should we go back to Johan? What do you think? Is there anything we should be using?
Yeah, well, I mean, the main thing is obviously the switch to the digital. So, like, I think since the pandemic arrived, the emphasis on social media, gaming for good, email marketing, stuff like that, basically anything virtual has been massive. But it had these, I think it was done out of necessity. So obviously charities had to pivot, and the main benefits came sort of after the fact, and they sort of realized they can improve reach, overcome geographical limitations, cut costs, and basically make fundraising more efficient. And all that was almost just a side effect of a symptom of that change. And so I think the present is taking the past and looking at the future, obviously. And then, so I think the present is hybrid, and the future will be a continuation of that hybrid. So I think if you look at some of the things that are currently happening, in the past, fundraising ideas, for example, were very creative. People would do really weird things, ranging from sort of dares to bingo to raffles and all these, you know, myriad other like alternatives. And I think we're seeing right now is a sort of virtual creativity, exploring what charities can do with that hybrid. And we're seeing like murder mystery events on the virtual form, bingo and karaoke and all these dance things. And I think charities are really finding their feet in terms of virtual ideas. Gaming for Good is a really good example because charities are making huge amounts of money, and it's something that they just never thought they would. Gaming doesn't seem to lend itself to fundraising, but as soon as someone sort of travails that initial instance, then all charities sort of see how it's easy to do. So, you know, it's just on Twitch. You go on a social, you approach influencers and you get them involved. And it's as simple as that to act fun. So I think the other thing that would be interesting about the present that we're going to take forward is actually the act of collecting money. And I'm sure the other guests have stuff to say on this as well, but it's the cash and the contactless. So I think QR codes, text to donate, all these things are massive. And we have examples of that happening already. The Mayor of London teamed up with TAP. They created contactless sort of hubs and cashless donation centres across London across for homeless London, people. Yeah. This was prior to the pandemic. Yeah, and that's prior to the pandemic. They raised £7,000 in a few weeks with platforms like Beam. I read about the National History Museum has set up a contactless donation box, which I actually saw not too long ago, and it raised huge amounts of money because I don't carry cash, as I think most people don't carry cash. So just having that option to give a couple of quid is huge. And I read as well about a contactless church donation plate through an app or platform called Goodbox. So basically,
I was about to say that.
You can actually just... Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, carry on. Yeah.
And then there's stuff like Pledge Jar that are taking micro donations as a fundraising app that a lot of people are using, and SumUp and Zettle and so many more. So I think there's two pronged, and one is that ideas are becoming increasingly creative and they're increasingly dealing with this hybrid situation that will be the present and is the present, sorry, and will be the future. And on the other hand, they're looking at new ways to diversify collecting money. And to be honest, it's a lot of exciting stuff. And I think the key for charities is to really embrace it all and see what works for them and dismiss what doesn't. I think we often give that advice, see what works for you. But it's also so important to just, if something isn't working, just don't do it. Mm. And I don't know if that helps.
I went to see A Christmas Carol in the theatre last night, actually, in preparation for research for this. And afterwards, they were raising money for Fair Share. And they had the little bucket in the front of house, but they also had in the programme a number you could text to donate because they knew that people weren't going to... The whole bar at the Old Vic is cashless, so it makes sense that they would prepare for that eventuality. But I thought it was just really interesting what you were saying about the platforms and all the different ways you can donate, that they did have two ways, and it was either you find the text button on the in the programme or you they still have the bucket.
It's also interesting that it took you this long to mention that you'd seen A Christmas Carol.
I know. How relevant to this podcast is everything you just said. It almost sounds like you made it up.
Exactly. Were you actually?
I was just saving it for the opportune moment. What can I say?
but you know, jumping on what Johan said as well, when it comes to, you know, charities having to maybe, you know, it might feel a little bit overwhelming for some charities. They're like, oh, we've got this new audience that we've won over doing Facebook fundraising events online. And then we have these people that have just turned up. How do we keep them? How do we keep them engaged now that we're all going back to face-to-face? And I think also when looking at different fundraising tools, and, you know, like you mentioned, Laura, text to donate or gaming and live streaming, I think it's also good for charities to think where the audience is. Because obviously, if they have a more traditional supporting audience, then maybe Facebook and some more traditional social media are the way to go, and kind of keeping that in mind. I think it's important because you don't want to do, you know, live streaming is really good. And I mean, I'm personally not a gamer, but maybe some of you are using Twitch and all. And you know, there's some big examples of charities. I mean, there was one recently in France called Zed Event. And they did a 48 hours gaming marathon, and they raised like 20 million euros for Action Against Hunger. I mean, the figures are huge and massive. And you can also have, you know, very much smaller gamers that are very happy to support you as well. But I think if your audience is not necessarily on there, it's okay if you don't do it, if that makes sense. It's not because it's, you know, it's all it's all big and bold and beautiful that you have to jump on it straight away. You can either test a little bit and then see how it goes. Usually what we've seen over the past few months is, you know, simple tools like the text to donate and QR codes. I think they are very simple for any charities to jump on. And they're still easier for the supporters to donate. And I'm thinking about all the little school fairs that you can donate by just scanning your QR code. So yeah, your school fair, you don't need to do maybe a live streaming fundraising. You can just do another bake sale, but instead of cash, people scan and donate, or people tap. So I think it's really important to keep your supporting audience front of mind when you have all these different fundraising platforms and tools available, because it can feel a little bit dizzy, and you know, should we be there because everybody's in there? Well, not necessarily. That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is about kind of just meeting your audience where they are at. I mean, what I found quite interesting, I remember loads of adverts on TV in the past with Macmillan's kind of coffee mornings. Obviously, that's quite a famous thing. But they actually estimated in 2020 that they would lose approximately £95 million in donations just because of the pandemic. So instead of obviously kind of going through something like that, they decided to increase their focus more on things like Macmillan Games Nights In. And also they actually did have things like, you know, thinking about online games such as virtual escape rooms, quizzes, but also something about social media. I know you sort of mentioned it, Lisa, just seeing what trends are happening at the moment. I think that's something that a lot of charities had to do, is kind of tap into, okay, what are our audience actually doing during the pandemic? You know, what's happening at home? And apparently, this is something I didn't realise was a trend, they kind of had this whole tactic of, you know, Brave the Shave, which was essentially a sponsored head shaving event.
Oh, yes,
teenagers.
I heard of it.
Towards teenagers and young people, which is probably why I didn't get the memo. And that became, you know, buzz cuts became a viral trend in lockdown. And I can imagine, you know, it's so easy. If you've got a really good idea, right? If you just put something on social media, it's almost exponential, isn't it? You get one, let's say viral. One of your friends posts something, a story, an Instagram story, and they say, this is for charity, £5, I've just shaved my head or whatever. And then you'll get a lot of other people getting involved. And that's the case with so many, especially social media fundraising campaigns. It is just having a good idea that you know communities of people online will adopt and have fun with and enjoy kind of posting that selfie or whatever on their Instagram stories or Facebook. I think it's just about being creative with it. I think it's, you know, COVID-19 wasn't fun, lockdown wasn't fun, but it was about trying to have some fun somehow online. And I think some charities like Macmillan in this case did a really good job of it.
I know. And remember, in fundraising, there's fun.
Oh, Lisa, I wasn't going to say it, but there you go.
Yeah, that's great. I think, I felt very inspired by many, many, especially small charities that have tried, things during lockdown or towards the end of lockdown, and that have really smashed their fundraising goal, or because they had maybe a lower, you know, lower expectations. They were like, oh, okay, we'll see how it goes. And it turns out that it worked really, really well for them. And there's a lot of story, obviously, that we run on, you know, at the Digital Fundraising Day through podcasts and other webinars, that hopefully should be very inspiring for all of you listeners and people that are tuning in today. Because so long as you're, you know, what your audience likes, and you're ready to try, go for it, because there's a lot of options out there. And also, I'd also like to add that with the pandemic, we've seen that there are other ways that charities can get support. Obviously, money is the most important, but it could also be, time, volunteers, other skills, or having, local businesses or bigger businesses helping you with surplus or furniture surplus or other things. So I think that the present a little bit, but the future is also going to be, from a charity perspective, what can I get beyond funds? Can I maybe action more of my network and have build more meaningful relationships with other types of supporters to get more volunteers or more skills for my cause? I don't know whether we're already on the future, but yeah. I feel like that's also interesting.
Yeah. That takes us quite neatly into the future, actually. Thank you, Lisa. Again, you're all very good at the segues here. So finally, we're at our final spirit. So tell me, spirits, does fundraising live? What's next for us all?
Does fundraising live?
Fundraising is Tiny Tim in this situation, okay? I want to know.
I'd like to go first.
Lisa, if you've got
I think, there are some very technical terms like, the use of AI or the use of chatbots. Essentially, chatbots are the little message that pops on the bottom right hand side of the website, say, can I help, that sort of thing. And then you can turn these chatbots into, you can have actual conversation with people that through your donation you would support. I think there was WaterAid that did that sort of chatbot thing where people, supporters could experience what it was like to live in a very remote village in somewhere in the world where access to water was very difficult. And obviously by using this AI and this chatbot technology, they were able to provide even more, share even more of an experience with the supporter and hopefully initiate more donations. So I think there's a lot that AI and chatbot can sort of teach us or help us with. Also, as we've touched upon, the contactless technologies and the live streaming, the gaming by Twitch, by Facebook gaming as well. I didn't know it existed because I've only heard of Twitch, but actually Facebook gaming exists, and YouTube obviously being the main live streaming as well. And then, like I was saying, looking beyond funds, what other things can you charities gain in the futures that you might not think of at the moment, but that could be very beneficial for you? I think that would be one of the future of fundraising.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And to jump on it, I would just say with chatbots, there's some other examples like Mencap have an Understand Me chatbot on their site. And that's it's called, I think it's pronounced Aaron. And the chatbot has learner disability and allows users to sort of discover more about what that means and how it affects life. And people are pivoting to chatbots on sort of Amazon Echo. And I don't know what the Google one's called. I can't remember. But, the one where they basically can talk to a person or a chatbot in person, in theory, but of course it's not a real person, where they were actually just talked about the issues they're affecting. So I think with a lot of this tech, like with virtual reality, NFT, blockchain, crypto, all these new things, I think charities need to embrace it because they sort of do this bridge between the past and the future over the present, essentially. So if in the past we have this authenticity, this personalization, and in the present we sort of lack that a little bit with the sort of coldness of virtual, I think the high tech, while charities often fear that or feel it's too complex or too costly, it can actually be quite simple and bridge that gap. So stuff like the chatbot, for example, with its personality, it actually offers this sense of personalization. It offers this sense of, you know, the authenticity, which was lacking in the present. Blockchain is another example because it offers transparency and trust where charities have often lacked that. So again, I mentioned earlier, one of the things about the past with local fundraising is people saw impact. Mm-hmm. So they saw where the money was going. And blockchain offers a similar version of that just on a wider scale because it's a decentralized ledger essentially. And everyone can have transparency of where money's going with complete oversight. So people now can donate to local and national charities on a much broader scale, but still see where their money's been spent, still have an emotional connection with that. Mm-hmm. So it's almost counterintuitive because NFTs offer similar opportunities with fundraising where people can feel a part of the charity. They get buy-in with the charity through essentially, you know, having these actual things that give them that ability. And blockchain with platforms like Alice, through you using Ethereum and so on and so forth, you can track your payments and see exactly how the money's spent. So these high-tech things that charities, in my opinion, wrongly avoid because of the fear of complexity, can actually add to authenticity, add to personality, and bring that sort of future, that hybridness of using the best of both virtual and the best of in-person, and sort of lead the way there, I think.
Yeah.
That's super interesting. To be honest, I hear NFTs and I panic.
Me too.
I think that is the thing, though. That a lot of this stuff, I panic as well. If I'm ever writing about it, I'm like, okay, what is this and how will it help charities? And within half an hour, it becomes clear. And I think it's actually jargon that's created a lot of the time. People used to say that about like economics and science, not science, but with economics particularly, people used to use over-the-top jargon to protect themselves almost. So like, oh, you don't have access to this. It's a kind of form of exclusivity, like excluding people from that conversation to make themselves feel really smart. Yeah. I'm kind of tearing apart an entire industry here, but in the sense, I think tech magazines, tech content people, they do the same thing. Instead of simplifying it so everyone can have access, they make it more complex so it feels like it's something out of their reach. Mm-hmm. And for charities, as soon as you do half an hour research, which you can do on charitydigital.com
.org.
.org.uk.
plug there.
Yeah, but no, if you do your research within half an hour, I really assure you will understand how this might work. And again, it might not be what works for your charity, but a lot of the time these things are not as scary as they seem and actually can be quite cheap and can be effective and give you those benefits. So yeah, definitely look into them a little bit before you sort of dismiss them, I think. Not you, Laura.
You could definitely say that the people that are trying to keep it exclusive are being a bit of a Scrooge, aren't they? Thank you, Lisa, for that pity one.
I like that.
I'm ashamed.
I'm sorry, this will be the last time I host a Charity Digital podcast. Sasha, do you have anything to add on the future of fundraising?
Yeah, I mean, I think just carrying on a little bit from the idea of platforms, I think there are really easy things as well that you can do, and that a lot of charities might actually just not really be aware of. You know, I was thinking a bit about how it's, for example, Gen Z might be considered a group of people that a lot of charities don't feel would want to target. Maybe Gen Z audience might not feel a strong relationship to the charity's cause, but I don't always feel that they're a group of people that you should dismiss. You know, at the end of the day, nearly two-fifths of Gen Z have given to three or more causes in the last 3 months. So they're not someone to dismiss, but equally, I also understand that time is precious and we don't always want to kind of direct all of our attention to all groups of people. But there are easy things that you can do. You can turn your Facebook fundraising on, for example. There's really easy instructions on how to do that. And as a result, that means that fundraisers can find you really easily on Facebook and then start a fundraising initiative for your charity. That's something that's so easy. It's free. You don't have to do much. Probably only takes, 30 minutes, if not less. But that enables people who do support you and who might be more present on kind of social media platforms to actually start a fundraising initiative for you. And so I think it's just small things like that can sometimes be underrated. Similarly, you know, actually social media platforms do offer a lot of free alternatives for fundraising. Instagram, they have things like donate stickers. They've got kind of live streaming as well, all of which can cater charities. And as a result, because a lot of social media, you know, it has that reach, you can actually probably raise a lot of money from it. So I think it's not something to always dismiss. And at the same time, there are obviously kind of more high tech approaches that you can take in the future, like we've just mentioned, but also just thinking about automation here. You know, when someone does give their first donation, what are you doing afterwards? Are you kind of following up with a really nice kind of personalized email saying thank you so much, here's what your donation is going to do? You know, actually I read that a lot of people have, the donations have declined over the past 18 months, yes, because of COVID, but also because people are losing trust in charities. And there's been some kind of big media stories of malpractice, but that can have an effect. And I think as a result, being really transparent with where your donations are going, what the effect is, what the impact is of someone giving £5 or £50, that makes all the difference. And you can do that through, you know, an email to say thank you for your donation. You can do that from publicising it on your website, using impact reporting, not just for your key stakeholders, but also for your audience as well, sharing that on your social media. I think it's just having, yes, there's a lot you can do in terms of fundraising campaigns and fundraising activities, but I think there's also a lot of other kind of stuff between as well, making sure that your supporters feel good about donating to you, and you're building that relationship outside of just the one-off donation, you know. I think there's kind of things around that we can bring more to light in the future, and we can focus more into the future. I know I've probably given a few points there, just one.
Great. I think it's, you know, not to quote A Christmas Carol again, but it's about carrying Christmas in our hearts, isn't it? Like, carrying exactly. Giving and spirit.
Exactly. And
yeah. So sorry. Well, I hope you're all feeling festive after that. Thank you so much, everyone, for all of your helpful thoughts on the past, present and future of fundraising. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you enjoyed this bit too much festive edition of the Charity Digital podcast, please rate and subscribe through your usual podcast provider. It helps other people to find us. And if you want more information on anything and everything to do with fundraising, we have plenty more content about that on our website. Yeah, so thank you for listening. And I don't think it would be a festive podcast if I didn't finish it this way. So as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
Oh my
God. Oh, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
And to all, good night. Dear Lord.
Oh, Laura.